Welcome to Off the Cuff with SDJ, a podcast about everyday life from the spiritual, the physical, and the metaphysical perspective. Each week, I'll bring you episodes that have a casual, laid-back, informal, and spontaneous look at this thing we call life. I'm Sunny Dawn Johnston. Now let's get started. All right. Welcome, my friends, to Off the Cuff with SDJ and my friend, Michael Tamora.
Hey, Michael. Hi, Sunny Dawn. It's great to see you.
Great to see you, too. I love that start. Little squeaky, doors opening. That's me. Shh, quiet, guys. So, no problem at all. So welcome, everyone, and thank you for joining us for today's podcast. We've got Michael Tamora here with us. I want to just share a little bit about this podcast for those of you that might be new. We're here every weekday, 1:11 p.m. right here on my Facebook fan page or Angels and Affirmations. Love to have you join us. Thank you very much. What I love to do is get to know people and not just kind of who they are on the outside, but who they really are. So we're always interviewing. We're just amazing people in the world, change makers. And Michael is absolutely one of those. So I'm excited to have him share with you some of his stories and some of his experiences. And we're going to get started in just a minute. I want to start, Michael, because I want to read your bio so people know a little bit about you that may be new to you. I don't know how they wouldn't know you, but if they don't know you, then they're going to find out real quick. All right. So Michael Tamora lives the miracle. Spiritually aware from childhood, he sees everyone the way they are, as immortal souls. To guide thousands to their healing, awakening, and true life purpose, he draws from years of intensive training, profound past life recall, nightly out-of-body sojourns, 4 decades of teaching and giving clairvoyant counseling, and a lifetime of extraordinary experiences, including having physically died 3 times, in full consciousness. You will get to experience him soon as well in major documentary feature film, in which top experts in the world from the fields of science, religion, and spirituality share their insights and wisdom about the role intuition plays as our personal guidance system through life. That is exciting. Awesome. Welcome, Michael. Good to have you here.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
It's great to be here. So right before we came on, I was just saying to Michael, the last time that we saw each other was probably about 8 or 9 years ago, maybe. But yes. It was right after you had one of your near-death experiences. I don't even know how you keep track of them. So we got to talk about that because I know people are fascinated by those anyway. So just give us, I was just telling him, they don't want him over there. We need him over here, obviously. So tell us a little bit about you've had 3 like major near-death experiences and then 2 just minor ones, whatever I'm saying, near-death experiences.
You know what they say, you can't be just a little bit pregnant, right? Can you be just a little bit dead?
Exactly. I don't know what minor is, but whatever it is, tell us about it.
Well, I just call the last 2 happen after my cardiologist put a, ICD. I call it a paramedics in a box. It's implanted in my chest. It's hooked up. Computers and everything. And so if my heart stops and whatever, I drop dead, it zaps the heart. And that is not a pleasant experience if you're conscious. So the first time was very, it's, you know, you get to experience how instant everything is in spirit. You know, everybody thinks here, everything's over time and it's sequential. In spirit, there's no time ever. There's no time at all. So everything is instant, right here, right now, instant, forever. And so I was in excruciating pain at home, just been going on and on. I had a very terrible, terrible bout of gout. And so I'm just wore down and plus, I'm still teaching and everything.
Yeah, but doing all your work still.
Yes. And so in between things, I'm trying to rest and get some rest and healing. And I'm home by myself. And I finally got to the point, I'm just going, you know, God, I'm not sure how much more I can go on like this. Something's gotta change. And instantly I dropped dead for the first time. I mean, it was just like, boom, I was escorted. Archangel Michael came, escorted me straight to this like a beautiful celestial boardroom, like a conference boardroom. And there's five amazing, magnificent, enlightened beings sitting there and welcoming me, saying, oh, hey, it's like a party. Mm-hmm. And then I'm asked to sit down at the table, and they're saying, okay, you've done so much, you've accomplished so much, so that you're done. You've been way done. And so you have a choice. You can just stay here and everything. You don't have to go back to that pain and everything else. Or if you'd like, you can go back and to the body and continue and do more of what you would like to do. Total freedom. And so in that type of a space, I'm like, okay, fine, whatever. And then I'm looking at these magnificent beings and I'm going, wait a minute, here's my opportunity. I could ask them. I said, which would be, in your great wisdom, which would be more beneficial, not just to myself, but anyone who's involved in my life and anything that anyone I touch? And instantly, all five of them said unanimously, if you go back, you'll be of incredible more benefit than if you work from the spirit side. And I said, okay. And, you know, when there's not even a thought of pain, not even a thought of suffering, there's no death, there's, you know, none of that stuff. So it's very easy to make decisions like that. And I said, okay, send me back.
And then?
and so then I got escorted by Michael, you know, Archangel Michael, back to my body. Boom, come back, my heart's beating, I'm, you know, breathing and everything. And I'm going, okay. Then I realized, oh, yeah, it's a lot of pain. The body still, you know, a lot of pain. Then, right at the, before I was escorted back, I thought of that. Until I put my attention on the body, none of those thoughts entered my mind. But the moment I had a little inkling of attention on my body, oh, pain, mm-hmm. excruciating pain. Okay, you guys, I need some help. Mm-hmm. And you know what they said? Fine. You know, it's very efficient and economical, right? It's not, they're going to not chat about it for a while. It's just fine. Okay. And I said, great. Got back. And as soon as I got back, a voice right next to me says, okay, go on the computer and look up this and that. And I said, hey, I've researched this stuff for years, you know, gout and uric acid and all that. I know more than most everything that's on there. And says, just do it.
So you argued with the, I just want to be clear here.
Yes.
Argued with the voice.
I was arguing while I went to the computer.
Right.
I knew I was going to do it, but right, you know, right. Hey.
But for those of you that do that, because I'm an arguer too, I'm like, no, I don't, you know, and so that's okay. We can argue. We just want to always be sure to listen to the higher realms eventually, right?
Yeah, so it's a question, you know, and it's communication. Mm-hmm. It's if you just stuff it and just go, you know, I don't matter and my opinions don't count and all that stuff, there's no communication.
Right.
So you got to just be yourself. And so I go and type it in and I'm looking same old on the internet. And I'm saying, okay, what am I supposed to look at here? And I see this little thing flashing on the side. You know the column with the advertisements?
Yeah.
I never look at that, right? Mm-hmm. If I'm looking, especially if I'm doing research, I'm not looking at ads.
Right.
But right on the very top is one that I've never seen. It just got on.
Of course. That's how it works.
And that was, it didn't have the whole answer, but it got me to the next level.
Yeah.
And
steps.
Yeah. So over the course of the next few months, I was able to really heal myself. And so that was that. And of course, when I got back, I had a lot of communication from my guides. And they said, you got to walk away from your private practice of giving personal, private readings and healings and all that. And I said, okay. And they said, yeah, because you need to devote your whole time, full time, on teaching and teaching more people. I said, gotcha. So I said, well, I have all these commitments that were made before I checked out. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'd like to finish those commitments. I like to fulfill those commitments. And they said, you can, but you don't have to. Your slate's clean. You don't owe anybody anything. And all you have to do is tell them, no, I'm not doing that anymore. But I said, but they said, you know, if you want to, if you'd like to do that, you have free choice. You can do whatever you want. Okay, so I'd like to finish it off. It took me basically 2 years to finish out all the future, you know, the thing you make in the past, the future commitments.
Yes.
And the day I said, I'm done with my past. I'm done with all those commitments from before. I'm free. I get to now start creating on a completely different level. The next day, I died. Again. And so that was it. That's a long story, so I won't get into that part, the details. But in the middle of it, before I died, see, a lot of people think death, the physical death part, is the hardest part. Mm-hmm. That's a no-brainer.
Right, you know? Just boom, right?
And by that point, when the body kicks off, you're not in it anyway. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of people, I know you get a lot of people who ask you about, did they go through pain? Did they suffer? Well, I'm sure before you get to that point, you might be suffering like I did, you know, a
lot of pain, yes.
But the death is nothing. It's just, you're out of there.
Yeah.
And however horrendous the accident is or the, you know, illness is, that part is just like, hey, great. Yeah. None of that's there.
And I have a lot of people that tell me that as well from the spirit world. So you guys just really know that, because I think, Michael, that's so important. People get so obsessed about the pain they went through. And I'm like, hey, as soon as they start charting that course and they know they're going home, they're out of the body. They don't experience it. They just watch it and go, wow, you're like, it's
so,
right?
Yeah, you're up there, if it's a pretty brutal thing, you know, you're up there looking at, wow, that's brutal.
Yeah, exactly. It's true.
Yeah, so the next time, the steps leading up to the actual death part was the really important thing for me, anyway, in this experience, the second one, where, you know, I've never had a heart attack or anything like that. I've been very healthy all my life. Mm-hmm. And I felt very healthy at that point too. But I woke up in the morning, the night before Rafael and I were invited to a friend's, another healer and author speaker's birthday party in a next state. So we drove up, came back late at night. It was a great party. And the funny thing was, during that party, they found out my birthday was going to be in five days from then. And so they said, oh, we got to celebrate yours. They got an extra cake and, you know, 100, what do you call those torches? Candles. I thought they were going to burn down the cake, you know. That's when you get older and older. There's so many candles. It's a forest fire. Uh-huh. So this nice lady comes along with the cake and says, okay, Michael, you gotta close your eyes. You got to make your wish, birthday wish, and then blow it up. So everybody's quiet. I close my eyes and I'm in a great space. I'm just going, okay, birthday wish. What? I mean, I don't, there's nothing I want. This, I have everything. And then all of a sudden my mind clears, complete empty. And then it turns this velvet blackness. And from the middle of that velvet blackness, this golden light just starts to glow and fills up the whole mind just forever. And I get, oh, the Christ. I said, you know, this will be a good wish. I'd like to embody the Christ more. And I thought, okay, that's my wish for my birthday. Blew out the candles. Everybody laughed, clapped, and sang happy birthday and everything. Went our jolly way. And when that was happening, Raphael, my wife, who's also clairvoyant, she's talking to the host about 50 feet away. And she got scared because she saw me leaving. She said, I don't know what happened right before you blew out the candles, but I saw you leaving, and not just spacing out or getting out of the body, but leaving for more permanent. And so she didn't tell me about that at that point. Then we go home. The next morning, I had a very important meeting set up at 10 o'clock in the morning with a man who came all the way from Israel to find me. And he was starting a major global foundation between him, who's all total Israeli, and his best friend growing up, total Palestinian. And they got together one time at lunch and says, you know, they both very successful businessmen. And they said, you know, we got to do something about our children. We cannot allow our children to be, you know, educated or programmed to hate each other just because. So they start this foundation. They got all kinds of, you know, prime ministers and ministers of education and health and all that from different countries on board. And he said, we're missing a part of this, what were our vision. And he said, I'm going to take 9 months sabbatical from everything, travel the world where whatever this is calling me, I'm going to follow it. So, hey, brave guy, courage. And so he gets on the plane, he goes and says, he goes to the airport and says, where do I go first? And he hears a voice that says, go to the United States. So he thinks of United States, New York. So he flies to New York. He gets, lands in New York, says, after, you know, after spending a night there, he says, okay, now where? Go to California. So he flies to California, gets to the airport in San Francisco. He says, now where? Go to Mount Shasta. That's where I was living at that point. Gets to Mount Shasta, and he picks up a newspaper or whatever, and, oh, there's this conference called the Heart of the Awakened going on in Mount Shasta, three-day conference. So he signs up, goes to it. He's sitting through everything. He said, no, some of it was great. Some of it was, you know, so-so. And he's just going, you know, I don't know if I'm at the right place. This isn't quite my cup of tea. This isn't what I'm looking for. But he said, I'm committed. I have to finish until I go through this whole 3 days. Well, my talk was Sunday late morning before lunch or something. And so I get introduced. I go and give my talk. Well, afterwards, I get off the stage. I go out the front. And he's waiting for me at the front door and saying, I want to talk to you. He said, and so he told me the whole story I just told you. And he said, the first sentence that came out of your mouth was what I was looking for. And because I started with talking about children and the future of children and what the next step has to be, what's happening with the children now and on a spiritual level. And so he said, can I have a meeting with you tomorrow and blah, blah, blah. I said, fine, great. We set it up for 10 o'clock at our office. Go home. And the rest of that day was great. Oh, this happened. Let's see. This happened before the birthday party. Okay. And that's how the meeting was scheduled for that Monday when I woke up the night after, you know, the morning after the birthday party thing. Before I woke up out of bed, I was in total limitless bliss. It's not like waking up in the morning. It's like waking up to this eternal life, eternal bliss. And it has nothing to do with the body. It's not even about coming back to the body. It's just the awareness was right here. And so Raphael was already up feeding the pets and everything. I can hear her in the kitchen, but this just encompassed everything. So I just lay there for a while. And then I start to come to this bodily world existence. And I realize, oh, I have that meeting. I better get out of bed, get ready. This was 8:30 in the morning. I get out of bed. I'm still in this, you know, halfway or three quarters of the way in that bliss and one quarter of the way back here. I take a couple of steps and it's like I got thrown into the middle of a washing machine.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's upside down, inside out, turning around, and I have no clue which way is up. And so I holler out to Raphael. I says, oh, no, I didn't holler. She knew. She knew something happened. So she comes running into the bedroom, opens the door, and she sees me like this, and she goes, are you having a heart attack? And I said, hang on a second. let me check.
What the hell's going on right now?
Yeah, and you know, it's a hilarious thing in life. And so I used to be a nurse during my teens, like 18, 19, 20 years old. I was a nurse in San Francisco. And so, but I hadn't done anything in the medical field since then. So I'm going, oh yeah, I learned about the symptomology of heart attacks.
Yeah.
But the first one I got was not the medical symptomology, but the what you tell the lay people. It feels like you have a crushing chest, you know, like it feels like there's an elephant sitting on your chest.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm asking myself, does this feel like an elephant sitting on my chest? And of course, what kind of elephant do I get? I get this cartoon pink elephant sitting on my chest. So I'm laughing. I'm half laughing and half kind of trying to get it together. And I said, no, okay, what was the medical symptomology? Oh, yeah, radiating pain down the left arm, da-da-da-da, chest crushing, chest pain. I didn't have that. I had everything else except that. And at that time, I didn't know there's other symptomology, but you know, some people don't have these. But I said, no, you know, I don't think so. I think it's just a kundalini going off like in nobody's business. And it's just, I got to get it going straight. So I said, could you give me a healing? So yeah, okay, we'll go into the living room. She starts to give me a healing, but I couldn't sit down. It's just like, and so I start this. I don't remember any of this part.
I was going to say, were you, so you were okay. So you didn't remember it.
Yeah. Once I said, let's, you know, can I have a healing?
Right.
That part all up to there, I remember very clearly.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, I don't remember, but Raphael's the one who told me, she starts to give me a healing. I start to circle around the living room, around. And then not only did I start circling around the living room, I started to chant the Jewish prayer for the dead in Hebrew.
Mm-hmm.
Do I speak Hebrew? I don't know. I don't know what shalom, you know, I know one or two words in Hebrew.
Right.
So I said, how do you know it was Hebrew? How do you know it was a prayer for the dead? And she said, well, the strange thing was just a few nights ago, I was watching a show and they did the whole thing.
Mm.
And it was exactly what I heard on that show. And I said, I don't know. Well, at that time, I didn't connect the dots that I was going to go see this man from Israel.
Mm-hmm.
So it got to the point, and then I kind of became more conscious again. And I said, you know what? I need to go outside. I need to be in the sunshine. I need to be by the grass. I went downstairs on the back deck to the grass. We had this beautiful lawn area under a tree. So I went there. It's just beautiful. It was just the most gorgeous. I don't think I've ever seen our backyard that beautiful.
Yeah.
And then I collapsed on the ground and I'm up. I'm out of the body. And again, not only those same five great beings, but there was about 12, 13 of them circling me, mm-hmm. with me in the center, and they're circling around. And we're all floating up in the air. And my first thought, of course, was, thank God you guys are here. I think I had this idea that they're going to swoop down and, you know, save me or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And they just stood there. Very, I mean, tremendous love and compassion. But the message was very clear. It's just like, no, we can't intervene. This is your time. And this is the time for you to make a very important decision about life.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's all they would say. And then they backed off. They were still in the periphery, but you know, quite a few more feet away from me. The circle got bigger. And I'm going, wow, this is amazing. And so then I'm thinking, okay, what decision What kind of decision, very important life decision, does one have to make? So I didn't even make it personal to start with. I just wanted to get the, you know, right, how hard it is to think when you're in the middle of a heart attack? Even if you're mostly out of the body. And so even though I still didn't know I was having a heart attack, it was strenuous. And so I'm there going, and finally, after going through all these things, like, first I started with, well, most people would think about, do I call 911 or do I stay here and work this out? Or I don't want to die, so what do I do? Or I don't want to live because I don't want to be here.
Right.
You know? So I go through all those things. I said, no, that's just not where I'm at. And I know life is forever. And that's when I realized, yes, I know that, both by experience, many, many experiences, out-of-body experiences, you know, what I've learned, experienced all through my life. But this was different. I said, even though I am absolutely certain I don't have fear of the physical death, but I'm still looking and living my life as if life is from birth till death. And I know once the physical body's gone, I'm still going to go on. But I'm still focused on that in between birth and death.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And taking care of things in that realm. And I said, what would it be to choose to live the eternal life? Mm. And that's when the light bulb went on. I said, well, that's different. Because instantly I knew if I chose to live the eternal life forever, right? Mm-hmm. That means there's only one way you can live eternal life, is without conditions. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's when I said, oh, that's huge.
Without conditions.
Any conditions, mm-hmm, right?
On anything, right?
On anything.
Mm-hmm.
And when I looked at that, I said, no wonder nobody really wants to live forever.
Mm.
Because they're looking at all the conditions of their lives and saying, oh, this isn't good enough. I don't want to live forever as I am now.
Mm-hmm.
If I become perfect and absolute total bliss, then maybe I'll consider it, but not when life is like this, right?
Right.
So I'm going, okay, so what are my fears of living the eternal life of no condition? Well, I didn't mind staying here in the physical level. I already made that choice the first time that I'll come back and do more. And I wanted to keep that commitment. That's a new contract. But if they're going to take me, you know, I'm to leave, I had no problem with that. Okay, right now, if I can leave, no problem. But then I go, okay, where's the problem? The problem is if I come back here and I can't get off the floor, if I come back here and I'm going to be completely dependent on somebody to take care of my physical body until I can go,
sure,
mm-hmm, you know, what if I come back here and I'm blind? Mm-hmm. I come back here, I can't walk, you know, whatever, all those kinds of things. And including in that was, what if I come back here and I can't talk anymore?
Mm-hmm.
And so
fears were coming up.
Yeah. Those are all the, you know, what if, am I still willing to live a full life with those physical limitations? Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, you know what? I saw the writing on the wall. I'm looking at eternal life. And I said, sooner or later, I have to make that decision to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I could do it now, or I could do it next lifetime. I can do it in 10 lifetimes, but I see the writing. I have to do it somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm one of those guys where if I have to do it sometime, why postpone the inevitable?
Sure.
Let's do it now. Let's get it over with. So I said, okay, guys. Hey, God.
Here we go.
Here I go. And boy, I just said, go ahead. I'm putting my decision in. I'll learn to live the eternal life.
Mm.
Great. And bam, everything just cleared up. I came back into the body. And I don't think I was dead. I'm sure the heart was still beating and everything was going at a minimal level. But I came back into the body. I lifted my head. Oh, and then when I came back into my body, I'm looking at this verdant, jewel green grass and under my face, and I go, oh, and I'm experiencing Mother Earth, mm-hmm. just direct experience of Mother Earth. And I said, Mother, you know, at that point, I felt this pressure in my chest. Mm-hmm. Something had to come out. And I said, may I let go of this pressure? Whatever is in there, release it into you. And oh, it was the most amazing experience. The green grass that I'm seeing with my physical eyes parted like a curtain, and it became complete velvety, infinite blackness. And then all of a sudden, this like the dam broke inside my chest, and it just went poof, all this energy, all this blackness, darkness came out of my heart area. And I can see all these faces, and I start to realize, oh, being a lifelong healer. And even though I clean up my energy field every time I finish a healing, there's residue, you know, and sometimes you're rushing and all those things. So over the years, I collected the bits and pieces, of pain and suffering and emotional distress, all kinds of things I took on from people I helped. And I'm just letting it go. Like, I see their faces. I could see what was going on. Just going really fast, like a dam breaking down into the darkness. And then once that all goes, the darkness closes. I'm seeing the green grass. I get up and I'm going, wow, I'm okay. And just when I turned around, the gardener we had just hired like a week or two before. So I didn't really ever meet him, but I knew of him. And when I turn around, he's going, oh, Mr. Tamura, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to disturb your meditation. And I thought, nah, if I say anything, I'll just make it too complicated.
Uh-huh.
But later on, I found out that our gardener, before he became a gardener, he was a paramedic.
Mm.
So,
wow.
God's plan B, right?
If he doesn't get it, I'm going to put this guy.
Yeah, if I didn't come back, you know, or I was unconscious, he would have known what to do.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. So I thought, wow, this is amazing how spirit works, how everything is orchestrated.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to run upstairs back to the living room. Raphael's still giving me a healing. And I all of a sudden remember, oh, I have a meeting at 10 o'clock and it's 9:40. I said, I'm just going to change. Could you, I'm too weak to drive myself. I don't trust myself driving. Would you drop me off at the office so I could meet with this guy from Israel? And she goes, sure. And she's got her gears working, you know? And so we get on the car, go driving, and the town was like 2 minutes drive from my office, was about two, three minutes drive from house. And she turns the corner and she says, you know what? Why don't we swing by the ER on the way to the office? You still have enough time. And while you were changing, I rescheduled your meeting for, you know, a couple of days from now.
Oh,
I said, okay, sure. Why not? And because at that point I look up, I finally got the green light to go to the hospital. Until then, I knew I had to deal with this and come to some important something myself.
Sure.
And now it's okay to get checked out and see what else I needed. Well, when I got to the hospital, and I'm so happy. I'm laughing, and Raphael's the one with, you know, is he gonna drop dead or what again?
Uh-huh.
And so she's concerned. The triage nurse comes out from the ER and looks at her, looks at me, and she goes, she asks Raphael, which of you has the problem? And so, of course, I immediately crack up. And she goes, this guy, he's got chest pains and, you know, he needs to be checked out. And so then the triage nurse was hilarious. She turns over, talks to her back, and she goes, hey, we got another one, another chest pain. And she turns back to us. And because I'm laughing, it's like, I'm not in a bad space, right? And So I learned about that. And so she's going, just in the last 20 minutes, you're the fourth chest pain walking in that door.
Wow.
One of those people happened to be one of my students at that time.
Oh, wow.
And I said, oh, really? And how were they? They said, oh, everybody, nobody had a heart problem. Nobody had a heart attack. In fact, one guy, how I found out he was my student. He said, oh, one guy named Craig, he said he was built like a horse and healthier than most athletes and everything. And he had this horrible chest pain. So she wasn't thinking like I'm probably another one.
Right, no big deal. Right, right.
So I go into the ER doctor's place and she, we're talking and she's not in a big hurry or anything. So she asked me to lie down and ask me some questions. And on a scale of 1 to 0 to 10, what's your pain now? And I said, oh, now it's probably down. Wow, it came way down probably to about 4. And she goes, wait a minute, how long have you had this pain? And I said, then I realized I had no idea what time of the day it was. Mm. And I said, what time is it? And she looks at her watch and she says, it's 12:30. And I said, oh, I know. It started at 8:30 this morning. And she goes, 4 hours? And she starts scrambling. She's barking out orders to everybody. And I'm all wired up and everything. And she's looking at the EKG. It's, oh my God. And she runs the phone. She's, you know, you're screaming into the phone to somebody. And after listening to her, I realized she's talking to a cardiologist somewhere, mm-hmm. not at this hospital. And so she comes back and she clipboard and she says, okay, I'm going to have to give you this very powerful, dangerous drug that has a 50% chance of killing you. This was my reaction even at that point. I cracked up. I said, do you know how funny that sounds? And she's dead serious. And she says, see this? I want you to see this EKG. And she says, this is called a tombstone. You have all these humongous tombstones. And they call it tombstone, not just for a joke. They call it a tombstone because when people have that, they die. Mm-hmm. I said, okay. But I said, right now, I'm not dead.
Right.
In fact, I feel fairly good. Mm-hmm. But she said, you're still having a heart attack. You've been having a heart attack for 4 hours now. Wow. And then she said, I don't know how you're still alive. And so she goes, okay. I said, but if I take this drug, if I let you put this drug in me, it's going to reduce my chance of survival by 50%, isn't it? Because right now I'm 100% alive.
Right, you're 100% alive.
Do I want to cut my chances down to 50%? And she said, no. What I mean is if I don't give you this drug, you have 100% chance of death in the next very short while. Hmm. If I give you this, it's going to increase it 50%.
Wow.
But the drug itself can kill you, you know?
Right.
So I said, and by that point, I'm just having a great time because I'm seeing spirit just completely immersing the whole space, the whole ER. And I see the doctor's healing guide and spirit guide. There's angels everywhere. I see my guides and angels and everybody. And every person in there, the nurses and orderlies, everybody's doing whatever they're doing. None of them were aware that they're part of this grand divine choreography. It was like the ballet, you know, it was beautiful. And I'm going, you know, nothing can go wrong. I mean, if I croak, that's fine. Mm-hmm. If I don't, everything's going to work anyway. So no matter what happens, it's perfect. So I said, sure, you're the doc, you know, hey, I'll sign it. I like signing. So I sign it and she's a little bit more relieved. So we can now start talking. And then she's very curious. She goes, this is a very unusual experience. I've never had a person. Ever. I've encountered a lot of people in the middle of a heart attack. nobody was ever laughing. I said, hey, why not? If I'm going to go, I want to go laugh.
That's right. Why go?
I don't want to go in some morose, you know, level of fear or anger or whatever like that. And she goes, this is very unusual. But she couldn't. I had to wait an hour and a half or so for a fully equipped ambulance to come from a different, bigger city to pick me up because their ambulances were not properly equipped. Mm-hmm. So it was on that ambulance ride that I had my second actual near-death experience, where I'm looking at the face of this cherubic face of this young, who I thought was a paramedic in the back. And he looked like he was a high school sophomore, not even a senior. So young, he was like a high school sophomore. He's sweating bullets, right? Because he knows how serious
the condition is. Yeah.
And he has to keep me alive until we get there. So he's just like a hawk, and I'm going, this is great. And I said, hey, how long have you been a paramedic? And he says, oh, he got really excited. He says, next week is my final exam. And I, you know, a lot of people might think, oh no, I got a beginner, you know, in a life or death situation. I'm going, hooray. Because if you're learning, you're not going to get your eyes off of the patient.
Yeah.
You know, you're thinking all the time, okay, what's the right thing? What's the next step? Blah, 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 blah.
For sure.
And yeah. Whereas the old veteran in the front seat, who's his mentor, is talking about his golf game or something.
Yeah.
And so I told the kid, don't worry, I'm not going to croak on you. Mm-hmm. And that's the last word that came out of my mouth when I flatlined. Poor guy. I put him through the paces, boy. And that's when I went out the ceiling of the ambulance. And then I'm looking at Raphael was following in her SUV. We're going 75, 80 miles an hour in a mountain pass, right? So she's just concentrating, focused on keeping up with the ambulance. And I'm up there and I'm going, hi, sweetheart. And of course, she's very sensitive. She's very capable, clairvoyant. So she looks up and sees me. And I'm not thinking on her side, if she sees me out of my body from an ambulance, that's not good.
Right.
But for me.
That might be not good for your life, right?
Yeah. But again, I'm out of my body. Those thoughts don't enter my mind. And so I'm just going, hey, it's great to see you. And then I'm watching her. She's looking at me. And then she does this.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And she goes, so I put words in her mouth. I'm thinking, oh, she's going, if you don't come back, I'm going to kill you. And I go, okay. That's why I always joke when I came back. I joke, you know, I came back because I was so afraid you're going to kill me.
That's right. Over and over and over again. Yeah.
But what happened is right after that, I'm in a celestial realm. Everything from this world is gone. It's just complete peace and just this amazing space. And there's these five huge golden beings standing there above me. And then as I'm floating up in my astral body, one of those five beings, gold lights, starts coming down to meet me. And she turns into this incredible angel. And it was so fun because I'm thinking, oh, if I were to have to describe her to people here, I'd have to say, she was, by her appearance that she turned into, looked like a cross between the Mona Lisa and that, you know, Columbia Pictures, the movie, when it opens, there's that woman with like a Statue of Liberty. Yeah. Looked like she had that type of outfit, but glowing, radiant. And then her face was like Mona Lisa with that mysterious smile. And she's smiling at me and puts her hands on my chest, on my astral body chest, and says, not yet. you bad boy, you know, you're not supposed to be going dead again. And so she gently and lovingly pushes me back to the the lower levels, and now I'm back into the earth level, and then down through the roof of the ambulance back into my body. And when I pop into the body, that poor kid's holding the paddles in his hand, ready to zap me. And he goes, "He's back. I got the rhythm. It's back. He's back." So that was the second time. But the third time was the biggest. Third time was a full on, you know, I don't have much of a story to tell of the third time here, except hearsay of what people told me afterwards. Mm. I was at a gym at the peak of my fitness. I think at that point, I was stronger, physically more fit, healthier than I was as a teenager in sports.
And how long ago was that? Because that's the one that I saw you shortly after.
Yeah, that. Shortly after that was August. It was August 10th of 2011.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah.
Right after that, I was, you know, at the mm-hmm. Celebrate Your Life. Mm-hmm. And so it's been a ride. That one was a full on. I was working out on the aerobics on the elliptical machine, and I was apparently by myself in the whole aerobics part of the gym upstairs. And fortunately, my experience, the only thing I remember from the physical is it's like being suctioned out of my body with a hydraulic, you know, those hydraulic tubes that we used to put bank deposits or something at the drive-through. Yeah. Yeah. It goes instantly. It was like that. It was like I was in a hydraulic tube that just went shoop, and instantly from the body to complete nobody to eternity. And I'm the only way I can possibly describe it, because in timelessness, there are no words. Mm-hmm. There's because we speak in sentences, there's no linear sequence of events. Mm-hmm. So everything is all. And so I'm, the feeling of it, I guess, is like I was sitting right in front of the eternal flame of God's love. And that's all I can really describe. It's a indescribable, because one thing, there's no words, there's no sequence. It's a full on, and in fact, it's indescribable because there's no me. Mm-hmm. I don't exist right. like this.
Right, in this form, right.
Yeah.
Right.
And so then I didn't even exist in this type of consciousness that can put words together.
Sure.
It's just direct, total experience. And so this is the time where I was completely dead. The first responder that I got to meet later, about a couple weeks later, took me step by step of what he discovered. And he said I was deader than a doorknob. And the problem was they couldn't start CPR because I was tangled up in the elliptical machine, you know, that goes lying like this. So I fell through the cracks and my legs were twisted. And this, my arm was there. So when he came, in response to his mother, who was the manager of the place, he just happened to be there. He was a trained EMT, just happened to be there waiting for to take his mother out to lunch. And he was back for the weekend from his college, right? Mm-hmm. And he too was studying for his paramedics license. He already had his EMT license, but he didn't have his paramedics. So his mother calls him up. And even that was, they said it was like a horrifying Chinese fire drill, because the day before there was an emergency. There's two upstairs in the gym. One's a private apartment, and the woman who lived there had an epileptic seizure. Mm. So she had to call her son to go tend to her. So he assumed as soon as she said, "It's an emergency, go upstairs." And he went to the same upstairs on the total opposite end of the gym. So by the time she found him upstairs and realized he got the wrong place, he had to come all the way down, run across the entire pretty long gym, and then go upstairs the other way to find me. And then he found me all tangled up. So then he couldn't do it by himself. So he had to come back down, scream into the gym, Are there any, I need some help. I need some strong guys, you know? And all of a sudden, this other strong, very fit guy who was an EMT as well says, okay, I'm an EMT and I can help. And then two other guys came and helped. Four people, it took four people to get me out of the tangle to be able to lay me flat on the floor. And he said the whole time, there's absolutely, I was gone. No breathing, no heartbeat. And in fact, he said I was coming into a kind of a premature rigor mortis on a body level because I was so gone, completely gone. So I'm so glad I missed all that. On this side, it's all drama.
I don't know. I just think if you're hanging out with Michael Tamora and there's a paramedic around, you might want to go somewhere else. That's what I've learned from this conversation. Oh my goodness. So Michael, one of the things you said, and I think it was in your first, maybe it was in your second experience, because I thought this really stood out. I wrote it down, is when you were in spirit or before you had decided, you know, you could have that blank slate because you didn't owe anybody anything. And those were the words you used, didn't owe anybody anything. But you decided to go on for two more years and finish everything up. And then the day that you were finishing, then you die again. And so I wonder if in this whole experience, like when you were talking about having all that energy come out of your body, and I think there's so many people, not only that do healing work or they're teachers or guides, but in the environment of what we're even living in right now that are carrying the sadness and the pain and it is embodying them. Mm-hmm. And then that you don't owe anybody anything, that stood out to me because I think so many of us feel that way, like it's our responsibility. So can you speak to both of those for yes. the group? Because I think that those are two things that really stood out that I'd love to hear more about.
Yeah, that's, you're absolutely right. Those two things are so important. And responsibility is true responsibility as a soul, as a spiritual being incarnated in a body. Literally is what the word says, responsibility, right? So it's our ability as spirit to be able to make a decision and respond as a free spirit, as a free, powerful, creative being mm-hmm. to whatever circumstance. It's not some rule that, okay, it's your responsibility to do this, this, and this. Mm-hmm. Or you hurt me, it's your responsibility, right? It might be accountability, but it's not responsibility. Mm-hmm. It's so then when people start to think of responsibility in that way of it's my responsibility to save you.
Yeah.
It becomes control, mm-hmm. not healing. It's not unconditional love. It becomes control because I'm afraid. Mm-hmm. I can't let you die on my watch. You know, you hear that sometimes with doctors and whatnot. And I'm not going to let you die on my watch. Well, did you ask that person if this is their time to die or not?
Right.
So without knowing that, to make that presumption that it's my responsibility, that doesn't work mm-hmm. ultimately.
Right.
And a lot of karmic cycles get started that way and continues because then the other person's guilty the next time and the other, you know, goes back and forth and back and forth. And that's how wars start anyway, right?
Sure.
So the taking on is we can't take on anyone else's energy, problems, negativity, anything except through resistance. What we resist, we become, mm-hmm. right? Because we're spirit beingness. So what does beingness mean is that we're not like individual units of being. We're beingness. We're one. In spirit, there's not you and me and everybody else.
Right.
It's oneness. It's limitless. And part of a major reason for the main purpose for being here is to learn how to say hello to one each other, mm-hmm. yeah? Everyone. being able to say hello. And what does that mean? That means recognizing that the divinity that you are, the spirit that you are, the light, this limitless eternal light that you are, when I say hello to you, I'm recognizing that light within you the same way I recognize that light within myself, that I am. So when we learn to really communicate, we're communicating from ourselves, who we truly are as spirit, to who you truly are as that same spirit. Right. And to do that, we can't have all these judgments and control pictures and competition and you know, hatred and anger and resistance, all forms of resistance
right.
in front, because then you can't see me, mm-hmm. right? And so then what's resistance? For those of us who are healers at heart, whether you're a professional or you're interested or you're just healing people all the time because you want them to be well, you want them to be happy, successful, whatever aspect of healing, that it's part of you. You're here to offer that healing, share that healing so that we can, healing just means restoring to oneness, restoring ourselves to oneness, restoring each other to oneness, restoring the environment to oneness. It's just, that's healing.
Right.
So we start to, that's what we would like to have and see and experience in life. And so the more we start to restore to oneness, the more we start to experience that incredible joy of yeah. life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So then when we're doing that, we have a tendency to pick up, like I explained, I picked up over the many, many years, thousands of people I worked with. And even with my understanding and practice, I still had a lot of residue. Mm-hmm. This happens all the time for a lot of people because we care. Right. But what the residue sticks onto is our resistance. And for healers especially, people who care, people who love, the biggest resistance I've found is two things: trying to solve someone else's problem or trying to figure it out, trying to do something about it, trying to change the condition
of somebody else's circumstance.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so what? Why is that resistance? Because you can't do it. Mm-hmm. Only the one who creates it
right.
can change it.
Right.
Okay. So then what is this thing about, oh, I've been a lifelong healer, and somebody comes to me and says, oh, Michael, I'd like to have a healing. Great. I'll give you a healing. That's semantics. That's, you know, I don't want to spend 2 hours explaining what I really mean.
Right.
Because everybody understands it. As you know, most people understand healing is I'm experiencing life in these kind of conditions, mm-hmm. which I don't like, it's painful, which is not, it's limiting. I would like to be free and I'd like to experience life without some of these, being better conditions. Mm-hmm. Essentially healing is like that. And right. so what does that mean? Well, it's very simple. Part of the true healing is if you validate spirit, that which is beingness, eternity, limitlessness, then the conditions in which you exist are going to improve, whatever they are. If you invalidate spirit, the conditions in which you live are going to devolve, you become worse. That's all. I mean, either you can get better or worse right. in terms of the conditions. But that's just the conditions. But what changes the conditions is whether you validate spirit, you recognize, you realize spirit, you realize that you're spirit, you realize that you, your life is of spirit. And when you, the more you realize that, making it real, it's realizing, making it real, then your conditions automatically start to improve.
Sure.
But the more you deny it, no, you know, spirit doesn't exist. It's I'm not spirit. I'm this physical body, and I'm going to only believe what I can hold in my hand and as real. Then it's going to be tough. because you're separating yourself more from that which is the eternal substance of life and of truth. And so as we wake up, we're waking up from all the images in our mind, in our inner consciousness. And people talk about the unconscious and the subconscious and everything. All that really just means consciousness is consciousness. Awareness is eternal, limitless. But we start to barricade our awareness into little controllable units and saying, this is my mind. And you know, you can't read my mind because I have it barricaded.
Right.
So when you look on this clairvoyant level of in the limitlessness of everything, and you step out of all your judgments and expectations and everything else in your mind, oh, you see this vastness of forever. Mm-hmm. And when you see individual people in the vastness of forever, they're like in their own little units, surrounded by these images in their mind, and they're in the inside of it, staring at those images, saying, this is my reality. Mm-hmm. This is what life is about for me. This is what it is. Nothing's wrong with that. Everyone lives that way here in this world. But as you start to wake up, you're starting to go, wait a minute. No, this isn't true. We all experience that just in our personal relationships with people. We just decide this person's bad. And for a long time, I won't even talk to you because you're so bad, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't like you because you're bad. And that's just images in our mind that we're staring at, says this is bad person, this is bad person. And one day, let's say the other person just saves your life or comes from a place of such beauty, such lovingness, caring, and you're just blown away that, wow, I thought for all this time, I thought this person was bad or an idiot or whatever, and completely blows your mind. It doesn't blow your mind. It blows the contents you've really secured in your mind, and it leaves, sometimes temporarily, sometimes forever. And once it leaves, you get to see much more clearly who this person really is. Mm-hmm. And you go, wow, let's be friends. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's what we're here to learn. This is a kindergarten planet.
Right.
Kindergarten, you learn how to get along with each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. I love it. Everybody's commenting so much. They're like, they can't even believe your story is amazing. So if we were going to wrap up the one major thing that you learned from all of that, if you were going to take one message that as people have been listening, they're like, oh my God, this guy died all this time and all these different things happened. What ultimately, is that what it brought you to? Is that presence of living my life from the eternal instead of in these segmented areas? Is that ultimately what your major lesson is, or is there something else that kind of stands out along with that?
Oh, everything stands out. but it's what we call selfishness. You know, everyone lives for a long time and many of the incarnations believing life, my life especially, my life is about me. Mm-hmm. It's not. Mm-hmm. Life is about life. Mm-hmm. And we're all participants in it. Right? And so when we start to find that, oh, maybe this is a good way to put it. When we, you know, everyone daily, throughout the day, every day, 20, basically, even when you sleep in your dreams, 24/7, you have this dichotomy that's always vying for attention, so to speak. But it's difficult because it's not two polar opposites vying for your attention equally. One doesn't vie for your attention. One is still. Mm. One never changes. One is completely silent. God only, through some angels and messengers or whatever, could have a booming voice that says, okay, you know, this is your last chance or something. But other than that, you're not going to hear a booming voice. You're going to hear silence. You're going to hear this eternal, incredible peace. And yet, what's the noisy part that seems like there's a war going on inside of you all the time? Conflicts and wars and worries and fears and everything. Do this, do that, don't do this, do that. That's what we call the ego. Mm-hmm. And the ego is really not complicated. It's very sophisticated in the sense of it's got strategies that are very cunning.
Yeah.
But even talking about it like it has a life of its own, it's not true. Egos don't have a life of their own. It only has the life we give it, mm-hmm. right? And what's the ego? Ego is, my definition of an ego, is nothing trying to be something. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's why commercials like be somebody, you know, mm-hmm. be somebody, not be yourself, be somebody. That's the ego talking to you, okay? Yeah. And ego always communicates, if you want to call it communication, or demands in ultimatums, either or.
Yeah, spirit, this or that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, spirit never does. Spirit is all inclusive.
Yeah, it's and.
Yep.
Spirit is and.
Yeah. Spirit is and, both and, right? Mm-hmm. And the and part, both is whatever people think of as this or that, both of those plus everything else, plus whatever you can create.
Yeah.
Spirit recognizes your spirit. You're a fully creative being and you can create anything. Mm-hmm. So then to deal with the ego always putting its demands and desires in front of your face, it's just like a bully. A bully can't be unless the bully can engage you to fight.
Yep.
Not even in religions and everything, there's that Armageddon, you know, the final days, the battle between good and evil. Good doesn't fight.
Right.
Good remains in its own space, in its own truth, in its own power, and because there's nothing to fight in wholeness.
Right. It doesn't get activated by whatever dangly thing is in front of it, trying to get attention, whatever that is in front of you right now.
Yeah.
That's correct. I agree. 100%.
So the ego's always taunting you, you know, hey, what if you got famous? What if you got power? What if you got more money? What if you got this nice car? You know, like that. Wouldn't that be cool? And it's not wrong. It's not bad to just say, hey, that's a cool car. You know, I enjoy cars. I enjoy nice houses. I enjoy everything. Mm-hmm. But don't get stuck on it.
Right.
You know, don't make that your goal.
Right. That your focus.
Yeah.
Right.
And
right.
So to deal with a lot of times too, in the arena of people who are interested in being able to communicate with their guides, their spirit guides, more angels, more, how you can tell, are you listening to a heckler or a being that's trying to, that could be spiritual being, but trying to lead you astray to a different, you know, get off of your path that you're on? Or are you talking to and listening to a spirit guide who's really giving you the communication you need, the guidance you need? Very simple way is, if there's any kind of a either or ultimatum, any kind of a demand, or it's based on here's what you want. Mm-hmm. Because spirit doesn't want anything.
Right.
Yeah. And there's no wants. That's why, this is another thing that a lot of you might be experiencing as you get more and more awake. More and more awake to spirit, there's a phase that everybody goes through that feels like lack of motivation. Because heretofore, if you're used to being ambitious, if you're used to being driven by the avoidance of what you're afraid of, you know, avoidance of fear is powerful. Mm-hmm. If the great white shark is chasing you, you're going to swim like there's no tomorrow. You're going to swim faster than the Olympic champion. Right. Yeah, that's the kind of motivation you have. But what if the more you start to become aware of spirit, the less fear? You're not afraid of many things. And pretty soon when you're not afraid, where's that motivation now? It's not based on fear. It's not based on running away from or avoiding something.
Right.
Then you might feel like, well, I could wake up this morning. I could get dressed. I could go to work or not, you know? And that's actually a sign of freedom, creative freedom. But don't stay there. The next step, once you start to, every time you release more fear as your main motivational drive, you have to go the other way. You have to go to spirit. You have to be inspired.
Right.
Instead of being motivated, you have to be inspired. Motivation comes from the outside.
Yep.
Inspiration comes from the inside.
Yep.
So that's another thing you can tell. Oh, if it comes from the outside, that's the ego. If it comes from the inside, it's motivation. But even from the inside in spirit, a spirit that's ego-driven will act just like an ego. Mm-hmm. It will taunt you. It will be demanding. It will be rough and, you know, aggressive. And it's coming from a place of wanting. But spirit doesn't come from a place of wanting. Spirit is completely about having. Spirit, within you as spirit, you have everything. Mm-hmm. It's up to your creativity, to which you select to bring out. So a lot of you who are so, you've felt like all I want is a loving partnership, or all I want is to share my love with the world or with some people or whatever. And what you want isn't being loved. It's about being able to share the love that's about to burst you through you. Mm-hmm. Because you've been holding it back. You go, I don't have anybody to love. There's 7.8 billion people. Mm-hmm. And that's just incarnated people.
Right. Exactly.
There's
a lot. A lot.
Yeah. So yeah, you're looking for one person. No. All relationships, good relationships happen when you deal with all your relationships. And if you start to have great relationships, great communications with everyone, it's obvious you're going to find that extra special one person who you have a certain kind of relationship with, mm-hmm. partnership, life partnership type relationship. But other than that, why not have a great relationship with everyone?
Exactly. That's the goal. I can't believe how much our time flew, Michael. I'm like, oh my God.
Well, we're in eternity, right?
That's right. I jumped in with him. So there we are. I want to have people let people know, number one, where they can find you, because I know that your beautiful wife, Raphael, we had a couple issues, technology, Mercury retrograde issues, getting information, and she spent lots of time filling it out and it disappeared. And we had all this shit happening. And so I want to make sure that everybody knows how to get a hold of you, because you have a bunch of freebies right on your website.
Yes.
And get some information. So they go to
www.michaeltamura.com. So Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L. Tamura is T as in Tom, A-M as in Michael, U-R-A.com.
Right. MichaelTamura.com. And so you can get a lot of information. Obviously, Michael is, as you can tell, an amazing teacher and really open and inspiring. And I want to ask you just one question as we leave. If you had one message that's like you feel like the most important message that you could share with our audience today, Michael, that's short and sweet that they can go home with, what would that be?
Enjoy life. Yeah. Mm. Be happy. Don't make becoming happy a goal. Start with happy.
Yeah.
Choose happy. Happiness isn't something that's going to fall on you. Choose happiness.
I love it. Choose. That's my word. We have so many more choices than what people give themselves credit for. Yeah. So choose happiness. I love it. Thank you, my friend. I really enjoyed this. We need to jump on again where I can ask you some of the questions that I want to know.
Sure.
Don't die any more times. Because, no, that's enough, dude. They don't over there. It's not.
Thank you. Thank you,
Sunny. I appreciate it, my friend. We'll talk soon. Thank you, everyone. I hope you've enjoyed this. Again, if you enjoy Off the Cuff, come and join me at 1:11 p.m. Pacific time every weekday, where I have amazing people and change makers like this guy right here. And you can also download this Off the Cuff off of Apple iTunes or your regular podcast program, whatever you use. It will be available in a few days, and you can listen to it there and share it and spread it with your friends. And if you know somebody that might have enjoyed this, please go ahead and tag them right in the comments or share the video with them. Thank you so much. Thank you, Michael. Mwah. Appreciate it, my friend. So great to have you. Thank you so much for listening to Off the Cuff with SDJ. If you gained some knowledge, if you felt a connection, if you got some ahas or insight into this thing we call life, if you feel like you're a little more elevated than you were before you listened to this podcast, then please subscribe to this podcast. And if you're already signed up, please rate and review it. I'd greatly appreciate it. If you want to get more information about me and what I have to offer, go to my website, sunnydonjohnston.com. Thanks so much, my friend.